Okay.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Parents Tool Talk Radio with your host, Jody Johnston Powell, licensed social worker, certified family life educator, second generation parent educator, and author of the award-winning book, The Parents Tool Shop, The Universal Blueprint for Building a Healthy Family. For over 25 years, Jody has been training parents and family service professionals nationwide and serving as a parenting expert to the media worldwide. Now, through the Parents Tool Talk radio show and teleseminar series, Jody shares her practical advice and introduces you to other experts who can give you proven effective advice on the issues that matter most to parents. So get ready to be informed, entertained, and enlightened as we join Jody now.
Hello, and welcome to Parents Tool Talk Radio. I'm so glad you joined us today. I'm Jody Johnston Powell, author of The Parents Tool Shop, and your host. Today, we are trying a new format for Parents Tool Talk that we're very excited about. In addition to our guest expert programs once a month, we're going to devote some shows to discussing topics specifically suggested by parents and inviting parents to call in and join in the discussion with us. Just a quick note for any foster parents who are listening to the show live, if you'd like to get CEUs for listening, just go to parentstooltalk.com/links for directions. That's www.parentstooltalk.com/links. And next, let me tell everyone who's listening live that you can call in anytime with a question related to our topics today, and we'll invite you into our live conversation. The way to do that is to call 347-205-9654. That's 347-205-9654. Just dial that number and follow the instructions that you hear to place yourself in our queue, and we'll bring you into the conversation as soon as we can. If you are going to just listen through the phone, just call in and don't do anything. If you have a question or would like to join in the discussion, then you'll want to hit the one key on your phone pad so that we know that you want us to bring you in. And once again, that number is 347-205-9654, and if you want to talk with us, hit the one key. And lastly, you can also send us your questions via the online chat room by typing in your question there. Just go to parentstooltalk.com and click the play/chat button right underneath today's show and description to access that chat room. And now, our topic today is nurturing your school-age children. And we're going to discuss how parents can support and nurture their children during the school years. We'll be talking about balancing school time and downtime and extracurricular activities, how to help your kids complete their homework without taking over too much, and when and how to have parent-teacher conferences. And you are welcome to ask additional questions that relate to school-age children issues, and I've already given you the information for how to submit those questions. Joining me today to discuss this topic is our guest parent and a Parents Tool Talk veteran, Greg Teal. And Greg first appeared as a guest expert on our February 2009 episode called Make a Playdate with Your Spouse. Today, he's joining us as a fellow parent who posed questions about our topic. And I always say to parents, when children ask you a question, they've already thought about the answer. So find out what they're thinking first. Now, since Greg has appeared as a guest expert in the past, we're looking forward to whatever ideas he has about the answers to the questions he posed, as well as me, of course, putting in my 2 cents worth at the end. So that's kind of the format that we'll follow. I'll share one of the questions that Greg asked. He'll give his thoughts on it, and then I will. And if we have anybody calling in who raises their hand, then we will look forward to bringing them into the conversation, too. So, Greg, it's good to have you back with us today.
Well, thank you very much, Jody. It's a pleasure and an honor to be with you.
Well, it's wonderful to have you back. I so appreciated all the questions that you submitted, and I'm curious how you came up with so many questions.
Thank you. Well, what I did was I first jot down a few of my own ideas that my wife, Geraldine, and I had when we were raising our two children who are now teenagers. So I tried to go back into my brain in regards to what was it like the kindergarten years, what was it like the early elementary years, the middle school years, and now we have a freshman and a junior in high school. And then what I did was I went and asked some of the neighbors who have school-aged children, what are some of their concerns, and are they the same as they were that my wife and I had, you know, 5-10 years ago, or have they changed in the past few years? So I tried to summarize some of their thoughts, and then I just shot them off to you, and I was hoping I wasn't going to overwhelm you and Chris.
I would always rather have more questions than not enough.
But oh, I'm the same way.
Yeah.
You can never get too much information.
I think that's a great idea. I'm sorry, say that again?
I said you can never get too much information, in my opinion.
And that's my opinion, too, and we always have an information-packed show every time. So I think it's great that you checked with other parents, and I like that you were kind of comparing it to maybe 5 or 10 years ago, because my guess is that there probably are some issues that are new in terms of things like cell phones and texting and all that kind of stuff. But I think a lot of the core issues are probably very similar if children are in a structured school setting as opposed to being homeschooled. I'm sure that there are some similar issues that come up, and those are the ones we'll start with. And, of course, we welcome parents to ask any particular questions that might be specific to their circumstances so we can support them in any way that we can. Greg, real briefly, you're here as a fellow parent today, but you do have some background around school issues. If you'll just share with our listeners what that is, they can maybe keep in mind that we have someone with that expertise with us today, too.
Gladly. Well, I am a certified family life educator, so my training and my expertise is how to deal with all stages of family life, for a single who is preparing for their next long-term relationship, to the engaged couples who's preparing for marriage or cohabitation, as well as for couples who are starting out their life as a coupleship and then eventually adding children to their family. And so I've been, you know, trained in all those areas, and I'm considered more of a generalist, of someone who does not delve very deep into one particular expertise, and that's all I do, but I like to cover a variety of topics with my clients. And I do this coaching either on the phone or in person in Colorado. So I've had clients who I've never met throughout the United States and throughout the world. So just know that there are resources available to you and someone who will gladly give you the time that you deserve if you do have a parenting question and a concern about your child.
That's great. And while you're talking about your practice, go ahead and give us your website now, but I'll give you a chance to say it again at the end.
Okay, great. It's www.relationshipcoach.us. So that's www.relationshipcoach.us. And I am your one-step provider for all relationships. So please know that, as I said, there are people that are trained to listen to you and to help guide you. We won't have your answers for you, but we will help guide you. Just as we're going to discuss today with your children, every parenting experience will not necessarily be the answers that you should take away, but considered information and possible options if it fits your needs and your child's needs.
Good comment, good caveat there. Now, before you were a CFLE, what did you do before that? Because I think that may play into today's discussion.
Well, I was a classroom teacher for 24 years. So I've taught every grade from 6th grade through seniors in high school, and a lot of my clients have been asking me questions about the elementary age children. So I've done the parenting role, I've done the educator role, as well as I bring today an idea of how a coach would respond to these topics as well. And so I've taught, as I said, every grade, and I've taught reading, which I consider is paramount in having a successful education for children. So I did that for almost a decade, as well as language arts, math, social sciences, you name it, I have almost taught it.
That's great. So we've got a wealth of information here and of expertise, and I'm sure every parent who calls in, every parent is an expert in their own child. So we'll have lots of experts on the call today. So you did submit a ton of questions. So let's start cranking through them and see if we can toss out some really great information that parents can be taking back. and using in their home. The first, I've broken down all these questions. I saw three main themes kind of cropping up, and I mentioned those at the top of the radio show, of balancing school time and downtime. That'll be our first, and we'll talk a little bit about balance as well as extracurricular activities. And then we're going to take our 20-minute break at 20 after, not, it's not a 20-minute break. It's our break at 20 minutes after the hour. And then we're going to come back and talk about homework in our middle segment, and then right around 40 after the hour or so, we'll take another quick break, give people a chance to call in, and then our last segment, we're going to be covering in our last segment, parent-teacher conferences. I'm like, all of a sudden, my brain burped there. So let's start with the first group of questions that have to do with balancing school time and downtime, because you had asked, what's the best balance between school and homework and after-school weekend downtime? So what are your thoughts as you were writing that question? What are some of your thoughts on that?
Okay, thank you, Jody. Well, first of all, of the three topics we're going to be focusing on today, this is the one theme that if you like to have control over a situation or have the illusion that you are controlling a situation, this is where the parent would have the most influence or the most input for their young child or their adolescent. So if you like to, you know, organize the family life and make sure the ship is running very sharply, this is one that you may want to pay particular attention to. So what I put together is a basic litmus test for balanced activity. Now, by balance, I don't mean 50%. That is not reality. That is, you know, just a false illusion, and we don't want to get caught in that trap. But balance could be, what is balanced for the type of life I want to live and I want our family to live, and my child wants to live? That's what I'm thinking of, a balance. And there will be ebbs and flows. There are times when you are very busy during the year and times you are not as busy. And that still can appear to be imbalanced for your reality. So here's my basic litmus test. I have five questions here. First one is, does your child appear tired, worn out, or have frequent colds or injuries due to their extracurricular activities? And if you answered yes to that, then you might want to look at, am I imbalanced? Am I pushing too hard? Are they too busy outside of family life or school activities? Okay, the second question on the litmus test is, are my child's grades slipping? Let's say from A's to B's or from B's to C's. Or are they just not working up to potential? Now, that's more of a gut-level reaction. Do I think they can do better academically than what they've shown me based upon their general intelligence, based upon their general personality, and their study skills? Thirdly, are my other family relationships suffering? Meaning, are the other children, if there are more than one, getting their needs met, or is all of our energy focused on one person? If one person is taking up too much of the family time, then chances are either the other children are getting shortchanged, or the adult relationship, which I'm a very big advocate for, couple date night and renewing that relationship, even once, and especially once you have children. Fourthly, is the downtime extreme? Okay, now we're going to the other end of the pendulum. Are they getting too much downtime? Are they appearing to be couch potatoes? Are they getting too much screen time, either in front of the TV or in front of the computer? And then lastly, are the extracurricular activities child-initiated or are they parent-initiated? So this is when you start to think about, okay, does my son or daughter show an interest in this activity, or is it just the parent that has an interest? Maybe they didn't take piano lessons when they were children, didn't have that opportunity, and now they're pushing for their children to do it to try to fulfill an adult need, not a child's need. Okay, so that's the basic litmus test, and it's just sort of food for thought of, you know, if you answered yes to any of those, you just might want to have time to reflect and to really figure out, am I doing this for my child or am I doing it for me? And then make sure you're clear about that. Now, one parent guideline that I have is during a school year, I recommend you offer your child one extracurricular activity plus the school activities that they do during the school day. So sometime between August and end of May or whenever your school calendar year is, I would think that would be in balance for most families, depending on your situation. One extracurricular activity in addition to their school time and schoolwork, homework afterwards. If you try to put in two or three extracurricular activities, depending on how much time that takes, you know, is it every night after school or is it just once a month, you know, that variable would have a big difference, then you might be overscheduled. You might be causing them to be tired or worn out or having the feeling that they can't, you know, just stay, keep their head above water with injuries and colds. Okay, and then during, I'm sorry, Jody.
So, say those are really good suggestions.
Thank you.
So
and I have one more here.
Okay,
and then
one more.
During the school breaks, maybe have one or two activities. So during the long summer break, if you're on a traditional calendar, then you might want to ease up on that one extracurricular activity and realize extracurricular activities don't have to be only school-related organized sports. It could be a board game. It can be chess club. It can be an arts and craft class at the local YMCA or recreation center. You know, it can be a variety of activities that will enrich your child.
Excellent. Those are really good suggestions.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah. So my two cents probably on this is in terms of just balancing school time and downtime, I do think all kids need some time every day to have free time or downtime, but when they need it might differ. Some kids need to have some downtime before they do homework so that they can expend some energy, and then they'll actually focus better. If they can, you know, go out and play for a little bit and then come in, they'll actually focus better. While there are some kids that need to do their homework first while the information is still fresh, and then they can go play a little bit later. As for extracurricular activities, and I'll just mention, Chris will be mentioning this on the break, but I do have an article that I'll be sharing with everybody in the post-call resources on extracurricular activities. You know, the thing with downtime is that some parents are concerned if their kids have too much downtime that they're going to get bored. And that may be the case, but kids need to learn how to use their imaginations. They need to learn how to handle boredom creatively and responsibly. And they also need to know how to find activities that they can keep themselves occupied with without parents necessarily being a full-time playmate. So, I mean, what I did with my kids was just had them brainstorm all the different things that they could do. And if they came to me and said, "Mom, I'm bored," then I would just refer them to their list and, you know, pick something on that. My son was one of those that he needed to go play for a while, and then he would concentrate on his homework better, and my daughter was just the opposite. She really needed to kind of get to it right away while it was fresh in her mind, and then she had the whole rest of the day. My comments on extracurricular activities will be in the article, of course, but I think a lot of parents really do fall into the trap of getting really overscheduled, and the more kids they have, the more their schedule can kind of just go spin out of control. I think what I always tell parents to do is to think about why. If they feel like they're constantly living in a car and they're you know, really not having much family time there because they're running kids all over the place, to figure out why that is. Sometimes parents just want to keep their kids out of trouble. And my perspective on that is that parents can be teaching their children how to use their time responsibly. And as children show that they can be responsible, then they can have more free time or more privileges. So I don't think parents necessarily have to control what their children are doing all the time and instead teach children how to control that for themselves. I think another reason why parents overschedule is because they want their children to experience every opportunity. The problem is that they often get into trying to experience them all at once. And then that just is overwhelming, and kids kind of become stressed and overachievers and don't have a hard time doing any one thing well. I think we're seeing a lot of research on multitasking.
and how it really is not more efficient. So that kind of relates to that. And every now and then you get parents who expect their kids to be super achievers. You know, they want them to be, you know, president of this and captain of that. And I think the question I always ask parents to ask themselves is, does my child want to do all these activities or do I want them to? And, you know, you called it the litmus test. I'd say the litmus test for that, for parents, is to figure out whether or not if they are registering their children for the activities without asking children first, then that's pretty much a big red flag, that maybe they need to back off, ask children what they want to do. And if it's the children who want to do everything all at once, then encourage moderation. And I'm like you, Greg. You know, I think that if parents can rotate, you know, seasonal activities, maybe do one or two extracurricular activities during the school year, then a lot of times that's manageable. I can remember coaching a team where a lot of the children had something every single night. And it was, you know, I mean, it was wonderful if these kids were able to keep up with their homework in spite of all of that, but everybody needs a little bit of downtime, both kids and ourselves. So that's my two cents worth.
Well, those are great ideas. When you were talking, remind me of a time when I was a tennis coach at the high school level and then also with the South Suburban Park and Rec District. And I remember one parent wanted to justify her job of being a full-time mom rather than going back into the paid workforce as she had done when she was single. And so what she thought she had to do was chauffeur her kids from one activity to another and get them in as many activities as she could to justify to herself and to her husband that she had a full-time stay-at-home mom job. And it was running the kids ragged. In fact, what happened was they would miss part of each activity because they couldn't coordinate logistically going from one activity to another and spending the whole practice there or the entire game. And so they were doing a very big disservice to the child and giving them the wrong message of it's okay to run 100 miles an hour and not do anything well, rather than cutting back and focusing on maybe one activity, at the most two, and doing them all well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm noticing the time. We are a little bit after 20 after the hour, so let's take a break. Let folks know how they can join in our conversation. Greg and I have lots of ideas, but we definitely want to hear from other people. So let me just take a few quick minutes to welcome anyone who's just joined us. This is Parents Tool Talk Radio, and I'm your host, Jody Johnston Powell, author of the Parents Tool Shop. And today we're talking about nurturing your school-age children. And joining me today is Greg Teal, who has appeared with us before as a guest expert back in February 2009. And today he's joining us as a guest parent and a knowledgeable one at that. We are going to be taking questions during the live show today, so if you'd like to join the conversation, just call 347-205-9654 and hit the 1 on your phone keypad to raise your hand. Or you can send us a question using the chat room at www.parentstooltalk.com. And we'll be taking a look at that. Our next segment is going to be around homework hassles. And I'm sure a lot of parents have been dealing with that, so feel free to prepare your questions and start calling in or typing in your question in the chat room. While you are doing that, I'm going to give my producer, Chris, a chance to tell everyone a little bit about our discount resource of the month, which is an audio recording of the live workshop, Blended or Tossed, Which is Your Parenting Style? We have a special offer on this resource, and Chris is going to tell you about that now.
Sure, Jody. Hi, Greg.
How you doing, Chris?
Doing fine. Thanks for being with us today. And I just want to thank everybody who is listening to the show today, whether you're catching it live as it happens or downloading it after the fact. We're glad you're here and we're glad you're listening. As Jody mentioned, this month our deep discount resource is an audio recording of the live workshop, Blended or Tossed, Which is Your Parenting Style? And this audio workshop is taught by Jody herself, and she'll help you discover whether your parenting style is best for reaching your parenting goals. She also teaches you the tools that you need to improve teamwork with your parenting partners and talks about the 6 reasons that even effective parenting tools might not always work. So this is a really valuable resource, and we hope you'll check it out. It's normally $10 to download digitally audio MP3 right to your computer. This month, we've been offering a 25% discount to our Facebook and Twitter followers. And also here on Parents Tool Talk, we offer double the Facebook and Twitter discounts. So that means it's 50% off the cost of the resource, and you can get it for just $5. Normally $10, now just $5. Also want to let you know that we normally only offer this discount during the live show, but since it's kind of late in the month, we're going to offer this discount through the end of October, and that gives any of you who are listening to the show after the fact a chance to take advantage of this great deal. So that way, if you happen to be listening to the show via podcast or download, and it's still the month of October, you can still take advantage. So to place your order right away, you can go to www.parentstooltalk.com/links. That's www.parentstooltalk.com/links. Just click that order link and the audio recording will go into your shopping cart. And that's when you enter the coupon code that will cut the price in half for you. And that discount code is PTT202. That's PTT, like Parents Tool Talk, and the numbers 202. And with that, I'll hand things back to you, Jody and Greg, and you can continue your discussion.
Great. Thank you so much, Chris. Chris, I have a question. On that audio, is that discount just on the download or on the CD too?
We can put it on the CD too. I think we happened to talk about putting it on the download, but we can make it for the CD as well.
Okay, let's do that just in case.
Okay, we'll make it for the CD too.
Okay, wonderful, great. So whatever is the best way for you to get it, that's up to you, and we'll make that half off. All right. Excuse me. Greg, let's get back to our discussion.
You sound like I did last week, Judy.
Yeah. So got that little frog out of there.
Yeah.
Now, Greg, you had several questions, actually, that related to kids completing their homework without enabling them. And I kind of saw a couple of different there were maybe two or three different questions about that. One had to do with, maybe why kids aren't doing their homework. You kind of called it an endless battle with getting it completed. And then mm-hmm. another one had to do with that piece of when are we doing too much when we're helping out kids? And then you also had one other question that we may have time to get to. So just kind of talking about just homework in general and getting it done, not so much the balancing out how much we help kids with it, because we'll get to that in our next question. But any ideas that you have for, if kids aren't getting their homework done, what are some things that have worked for you? And as you were talking with some of your neighbors and parents and as a teacher, what you saw in school, what are some suggestions that you have?
Great. Well, as a former teacher, what I would tell parents when they present this problem or this dilemma to me is I'd say, well, we need to first think about what type of learner is your child. And are they basically an auditory learner? Are they basically a visual learner or a kinesthetic learner? And so we try to categorize as where are their strengths. And so then what I would tell the parent is that if they have basically an auditory learner, they learn through speaking and through listening to information, then what I might want to do is encourage my child when they're at home doing their homework is to go ahead and verbalize their homework out loud. Read the question out loud so that they can hear it as an auditory learner, and it may make more sense to them. And then when they look up the information or write down their information, go ahead and read that out loud as well to see if the answer does address or respond correctly to the question at hand. So I want to get them actively involved in their learner, especially if it's an auditory learner. Okay, now if they're a visual learner, then some of what that is they might want a visually appealing study space at home. So maybe within reason, within your budget, ask your student, what type of study desk or study area would they like? How would they feel comfortable and be the most productive in getting their homework accomplished? Not how you would have done it when you were a student, but how will they want to do it? So I remember talking to my son just the other day, and he says, now that he's a freshman in high school, he says, Dad, I need a desk to do my homework, because sometimes when I'm at the kitchen table, there's too many distractions coming from the kitchen area of cleaning up the family dinner or from the television in the living room next door. And so he wanted a quiet study area in his bedroom or in another area of the house where he would not have distractions. And I thought, great, he is a visual learner. He needs a quiet place, and he needs to be focusing on the environment as well as what he's reading. And then if you have a kinesthetic learner in your family, you want to combine activity and study. So they might want to have one of those little soft, squishy balls or something they can have their hand that can keep them from fidgeting while they're trying to study and focus on the task at hand. Or you might want to suggest that they maybe pace in an area of the living room, like I'm doing right now. I must be a kinesthetic learner to a degree, because I'm in the family room pacing as I'm talking, and that helps me focus on what I want to say, rather than sitting in a chair, especially if they've been sitting at a student desk for 6-7 hours just previously. So you want to get them up and moving. So those are some of my recommendations, is look to how your child learns best, and they all have primary and secondary learning styles, and then try to accommodate those as much as you can at home. And then also schedule in when are they most alert. You had alluded to this, Jody, where some kids might want to do their homework first and then go play outside and be with their friends secondly. And that would be especially good if you're an analytic learner, because you want to get that done and you want to make sure you do well on your studies, and then the socializing comes later. And then other students may need to burn off their energy first, especially if they've been sitting for 6-7 hours in school, and then they can focus before dinner or after dinner is over.
Good. I'm glad you brought up the three different styles of learning, because those really do play a big part. Children can't always, and schools don't always set themselves up so that they are conducive to all the different learning styles, which can obviously contribute to difficulty learning at school, but then when they come home, it's nice if parents can be aware of what that learning style is and adjust the environment that way. When I was a child, what was helpful for me is I would go into my room and I would turn that music just so that no one would hear me speaking out loud, and then I would line up my stuffed animals and I would like teach them the information, because And I would do the same thing. I tend to pace back and forth. I'm one of those rare people that I'm actually all three, almost equally. I'm whenever I've done the assessments, which is kind of unusual. But I would walk back and forth. I would talk, and then I would like draw. And so, gee, any surprise now that I love doing parenting classes? You know, it's like, to me, it's play.
Yeah. But
I actually just last week was taking my dog for a walk around the block, and this is a whole other story that would get us into bullying, and I won't go off on the side tangent, but I intervened in a situation that was going on with some kids. They were school-age kids, probably maybe 10 or so, and after breaking up what was going on, and I was a bit concerned about their safety, got to talking to the kids, and this one kid made some comment about how he's no good at school. And I'm like, well, everybody's good at some things. You know, what are you good at? And he named all these physical things. He's a really good athlete, named all these sports, you know, but I can't do math. I can't do this or that. And I said, well, did you know that when you're at home, if you can stand or move while you're studying that it might actually help you be able to remember it better, or to go out and run for a little bit and then come in and focus a little bit. And when you're feeling kind of antsy, go out and run and then come back, and it'll help you focus, take a break after every 20 minutes. And he was like, really? Like, how do you do your math problems while you're running? No, you don't have to do them simultaneously, but just even things like standing up or doing the homework on a flip chart, you know, or something like that even can be something that would be both visual and maybe physically getting up and doing something. Before I go to the next question on the how much are we helping too much, you brought up the topic of the environment the kids are learning in and doing their homework in. What's your opinion or take on whether or not children should be allowed to have either a TV or radio going on in the background? You give your opinion and I'll give mine.
Yes, my parental opinion on that is that no TVs in the bedroom. or their main study area. So we don't have a TV in our family kitchen, which is they love studying at the kitchen table. And then also now as teenagers, they love studying in their bedroom, and there is no TV in there as well. Because I don't want them to get confused with doing homework versus I want to focus on something else and procrastinate doing my homework, especially if it's a subject that's challenging and they don't particularly enjoy that class or that teacher or the information. So that's our family rule, is no TV. In terms of a radio, since, you know, some of their, you know, clock radios for their alarm clock do have radio access, or their iPod does, for their music, we do still have that in there. And then I just, you know, every once in a while when I pop in on them, I just want to say, well, are you focusing hard on your studies, or are you listening to the radio and the lyrics, and how's that working for you? Now, in fact, that's one of my favorite questions is, well, how is this working for you? If it's working for you and if you're getting the results that you want and that, you know, we expect of our children, great. Keep doing it. And if it's not working for you, then we need to find a plan B.
Yeah, and that question is always, well, how's that working for you, in a sarcastic way? It's a truly curious, we want this to be as effective as possible.
Exactly.
Yeah, I would probably say my opinion is pretty close. I have done TV and have known kids who can do homework while the TV's on. Most of the time they are distracted by it and have a hard time focusing. Every now and then you'll get kids who can tune anything out, which is, you know, my question to that is, well, if you're tuning it out anyway, why does it need to be on?
Yeah.
But I've actually heard some researchers say that radio, on the other hand, again, as long as they're not listening to the lyrics and all that kind of stuff, that there are some kids that actually can concentrate better with that. And it really just depends on how you're wired. So I would agree with you, you know, find out how that works for them. Is it a distraction, or does it help calm them down, or possibly even help them focus more? There are certain tasks that I do. Some of it's because it's monotonous. But other times it's because I really need to focus. And one of them is accounting. And a lot of times that's one thing. I will turn on the radio when that's going on. And it's really, it just helps me get through it.
It depends on, is this new information? If I'm reading something for the first time, then I need it very quiet in my learning environment. And I was that way as a student as well. But if I'm reviewing, let's say for a test, and just trying to see what I remember, then a little bit of white noise or background noise as far as radio would be very helpful. As opposed to a TV, which then requires you to visually look at it and listen to it, which might take too many of your senses.
Yeah, yeah. Now, we've talked quite a bit about the different learning styles. Some other reasons that kids may not get to their homework, I'm going to name them off, but we're actually just a few minutes away from our next break, so I'm not necessarily going to give all the details in my answer, but they are in the article on halting homework hassles that everyone will get through the post-call resources. And if you don't happen to be on the mailing list to get those, if you just go to parentstoolshop.com and click on articles, you can find all the articles that we're mentioning today there. The thing that I always ask parents, and parents say that they're having a problem with their kids getting their homework done, is that a lot of times parents will say, well, if they're not doing homework, then I've got to stand over top of them, or I've got to get involved, or they start coming up with solutions. And my opinion is that it's premature to come up with a solution until you know what the cause of the problem is. And there's a few reasons why kids may not be getting their homework done. We've discussed one. Which is that their learning style may not be compatible with the way that homework is being set up, and we talk quite a bit about that. They may not have very good time management skills, and a lot of times parents will schedule their children's homework time and tell them how long they're going to work on it and everything else. What parents want to be doing is a couple things we've already mentioned in terms of when they do their homework, whether it's before or after play, how long they do homework and when they may be able to get breaks, what they may do during those breaks, and have children be coming up with scheduling their time instead of parents dictating that for them. So they might ask, how much time would you need to do your homework? And would you like to do it right after school or right after dinner? And how can you remember when it's time to do your homework? So that we're putting the ball back in their court so that it's homework is their responsibility. And so we don't want to be dictating too much of that. The second reason is that kids don't understand their homework. And if parents, instead of just giving the answer, can ask questions that help the child figure it out, then they learn how to learn. If parents are finding that they're needing to help every single day, then actually they may want to look at getting a tutor, as opposed to the parent always being the one to do that. The third reason kids may not get their homework done is that they forget it. They may have forgotten the homework itself or forget to do it once it's home, and this applies to forgotten books and lunches and backpacks too, and that's to teach kids organizational skills and use problem solving to ask kind of a similar question. So what can you do to remember? And it can be a self-reminder that they set up at school. My daughter used to put a smiley face on every paper that she needed to bring home and then had a special folder for anything that had to come home. And likewise, you know, in the morning it was packing up the backpacks the night before, where you're going to place them so you remember them, you know, that kind of thing. And that way, hopefully, it'll minimize forgetting. If they do forget, I usually tell parents to have a three strikes rule. You'll only deliver it three times a year. And the first time you do it, you don't say anything. When they come home, you review the self-reminders. Second time, you deliver it, but remind them they only get one more chance. Third time, that's it. You know, and again, after each one, you what are your self-reminders? And after the third one, remind them that's the last time that you're going to deliver it, and after that, they'll just need to experience the consequence of having no lunch or no homework of whatever that is. The fourth reason is that children don't see the value of homework. And so I've got some suggestions in the article for questions that you can ask, you know, such as, why do you think your teacher wants you to do homework? How can homework help you? What will happen if you don't do it? The key here is that we don't want to get into big, long lectures about values, that we want to ask them questions that get them to think up on their own what the value of this is so they can be self-motivated and can find some intrinsic value in doing something that they're not so crazy about. You know, we all do things we're not that pleased with having to do, and homework for them may be one of those. The last one is that children who don't do homework on purpose, it could be to get attention. Sometimes that's they kind of act stupid, so people will be involved with them. And what you want to do there is involve them in meaningful activities or spend special time with them at other times, so that they don't have to behave that way just to get your attention at that time. Another goal behind intentionally not doing homework is to prove that they've got power, which is refusing to cooperate, you know, like, you can't make me do it. The solution to power struggles like that are usually choices within limits. Bottom line is you got to get your homework done, so when or how do you want to get it done? It could be just to see if they can get others to take over, which we're going to get to next. Or they may do it for revenge, to punish a disliked teacher, and asking them who really suffers if you don't do your homework is a good question to ask for that, and help them find a more appropriate way to resolve the problem with their teacher. And then the last reason children will not do homework on purpose is that they're just so discouraged that they've given up. If they've really given up, it's a much deeper problem. You need to figure out what the real issue is and then resolve that in a way that teaches children how to solve their own problems. So those are, I think we cover quite a few different kinds of homework hassles. It is 40 after. We are flying through the time here. So we're going to take another break. And when we come back, let's talk about how do we know when we're doing too much when we are involved with kids, and also get to our last segment on parent-teacher conferences. So Chris will be coming up here. He's getting ready with his announcements. For those of you who have just joined us, this is Parents Tool Talk, and I'm your host, Jody Johnston-Powell of the Parents Tool Shop. Today we're talking about nurturing your school-age children, and joining me as a guest parent is Greg Teal, who has also appeared on our show as a guest expert. We are taking questions during the live show today, so if you'd like to join the conversation, just call 347-205-9654 and hit the 1 on your phone keypad to raise your hand, or you can send us a question using the chat room at parentstooltalk.com. And now I'd like to have my producer, Chris, come back for a moment and tell us about the Parents Tool Talk mailing list and the terrific resources you can get access to this month by being a part of that list.
Sure, Jody. Listeners, when you sign up for the Parents Tool Talk mailing list, you get access to bonus resources that help you get more out of every show and every topic we discuss. These bonus resources can range from articles written by Jody and our guests to book excerpts, bonus handouts, exclusive post-show recordings, and more. Within about 24 hours after the show airs is when we send out the post-show resources for that program. The resources for today's program include 3 articles by Jody, one on each of the major topics we've been discussing today. The one on extracurricular activity is titled "Extracurricular Often Means Family Stress." On the subject of homework, we have "Halting Homework Hassles," and an article on parent-teacher conferences, which is coming up next. So at least 3 articles from Jody's pen, available only to the Parents Tool Talk mailing list. And actually, you never know, when we tell you about these resources on the live show, that we're not going to think of 1, 2, or 3 more resources to include, resources you'll only ever know about when you're on the list. So to sign up for the mailing list, go to www.parentstoolshop.com/links. That's www.parentstooltalk. I'm sorry, I said Parents Tool Shop. Everybody erase that during your memory. It's www.parentstooltalk, all one word, .com/links. That's L-I-N-K-S. And Jody says this almost every episode. Today I'll say it for her, that we will never share your private information with anyone for any reason. Now I'll hand things back to you, Jody and Greg, and sorry about that little flub. That's the problem with having 2 websites sometimes. You get them mixed up.
Yeah, and the names are fairly close, too. So Parents Tool Shop is where all the resources and services are, and Parents Tool Talk is exclusively for what we're doing right now, which is our internet radio show. So we'll give folks a chance, and Chris will let me know if there's anyone who's got a question in the chat room or by phone. As we wrap up our previous segment and lead into the final one on parent-teacher conferences, both of them tie in with how do parents know when to step in and how can they step in without doing too much. I think I tossed out maybe a couple of points actually in my previous answer, but to ask you, Greg, if you have any comments on how do you know when we're supporting and how do we know if we're enabling? And first we'll talk about that in relation to homework, but then I think that's going to transition into when we need to step in when there's a problem at school, which will take us then into talking about parent-teacher conferences. So, Greg, we'll want to move through. I want to make sure we get through our parent-teacher conference segment before we have to start wrapping up at 5 before the top of the hour. So, Greg, in terms of when kids are doing their homework, what's your opinion on how involved do you think parents should be, and at what point do you think they're getting too involved?
Great questions. My opinion is that it is the parents' responsibility to inquire about homework each day and each weekend during the school year. So when our children come home, in addition to, hi, how you doing, how was your day today, give them a big hug, we always ask them, and what is your homework load for tonight? So that they know that we're aware that homework is given in one or more classes and that we have a family expectation that homework or silent reading or preparing for the next test or project will be done sometime during the course of the evening, okay, or afternoon before dinner. So that is one of our jobs, is to inquire about them so that they know it's in our forefront. And then also, if they're a global learner, that's where some of the kids, you know, forget about it. They had so much fun at school that they come home and they think it's still playtime and only playtime. So we would ask them the question. And then we would just remind them, okay, are you going to do it before dinner or after dinner? And give them a choice. Depending on their learning style, they know when is the best time for them, especially by the time they're in high school. And then when they're in elementary ages, what we might do is go ahead and do the snack thing, let them have a little bit of play time, and then we say, okay, now it's time for us to sit down at the kitchen table or in an area that's conducive to studying and work on their assignments. So we go through the notebook with them. So they need to be age appropriate. As high schoolers, we give them more flexibility to take ownership of that. In the elementary ages, we need to do more guidance. And then in terms of are you supporting or are you enabling your child with their homework, I have the litmus test of, well, is the parent helping the student to do their homework or are you doing it for them? And an indicator of that is whose handwriting is it in? If it's in your handwriting or with your answers in their handwriting, then you're doing it for them, and it's more a reflection on your needs as an adult to see them get a high grade or to prove something academically to their teacher rather than allowing them to be assessed on their abilities. So we need to depersonalize it and say this is not a reflection on the parent if the child does poorly on an assignment or a test or a grading period. It's an assessment on their abilities and how can we help them live to their potential. Okay, and then the number one thing as a former reading teacher is read often when they're young and let them see you in reading as an adult so that you can instill that lifelong learning of reading, which will help a visual learner in all areas of education.
Those are really good suggestions. When you had mentioned look at whose handwriting it is, the thought popped into my mind that it's not always just that there may be one other litmus test too, if I can add one onto that, and that's to pay attention to whether or not you're making statements or asking questions. Because I've seen a lot of parents get very invested in how good their kids do on something, and they make a lot of suggestions and advice. Well, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? Well, you're supposed to do this, or here is the answer. And they may never actually write a word in their own writing, but they're still really controlling and directing. Instead, if we're asking questions, such as, what ideas do you have for how you could blank? And those kinds of things where we're guiding children, then that's another maybe litmus test of being able to tell when we're crossing the line. The other thing that you had mentioned that I'd want to add my two cents worth, you talked about what the parent's role is. And one of the things I do when I do teacher trainings as well as parent trainings is talk about how success in school is like a three-legged stool, where the three legs are the parent, the teacher, and the student, and each one of us has a real important role. The parent's role is that of supporting cast member. Education really is primarily between the teacher and the child, and our role is to support the teacher and to support the child on the home front. It's not our job to necessarily directly do all the educating. The teachers are the primary ones for that, but to support that learning. And it's not to do problems and homework for our children, but to support our children in learning how to do that for themselves. So, everything from being encouraging to helping kids get organized and communicating with the teacher, which we're going to talk about next, are all ways that we can support both the student and the teacher in that relationship. Anything else, Greg, that you would add about enabling before we go on to talking about parent-teacher conferences?
No, I think we covered the highlights of that very well. So why don't we move on?
Okay, good. All right, so let's talk about when and how to have parent-teacher conferences. First part of that being, when do we have the parent-teacher conference? Actually, before we go on to that question, let me just say that Chris just let me know that there's a problem with the shopping cart. People are having a problem purchasing the resources that we had mentioned. And Chris has said if you can just wait an hour and try again, he's going to go in there and fix that. But since we're still live on the show right now, I don't know how – we were just talking about multitasking. So he will tend to that. So if you can all wait about an hour and try again, things should be working. We'll get in there and take a look at that. Okay. Sorry about that. All right. So the first question being, when do we intervene when we should call for a parent-teacher conference? There's some, first of all, let's just say there are some parent-teacher conferences that happen on a scheduled basis. Usually, you know, sometime in November, we're coming up on it. A lot of times there will be a parent-teacher night. Everybody comes in for real quick, 10 to 15-minute parent-teacher conference. Usually teachers are prepared to just deliver a pretty much one-way presentation to the parents of here's the status of how your child's doing. They'll usually cover grades, each of the different subjects, mention whether or not they're having any problems. Those particular types of parent-teacher conferences don't usually allow for enough time for parents to bring up additional issues or questions that they have or to really explore if there is a problem, how there might be a solution to that. So first of all, let's say that we're talking more, I think, Greg, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that are your questions and what my thought was. It's not so much those, except for one of your questions, which was should our children go to those conferences? My opinion is absolutely. It's their education. I think they should be able to go. I think that teachers will make an effort to be encouraging and positive in the way that they present the information, and that we can also ask children, is there any feedback that you'd like to give your teacher? What are some of the things that you like the best about her class? And if she says anything she thinks the child should improve, then we can say, you know, is there anything that if you could make a wish that you might change? Not that it's anything personal and no criticism of the parent, but, you know, it's the child's education. And so when adults meet with the child absent and talk about the child, the most important person is missing. So personally, I think that's fine and actually recommended that children come. Greg, what's your quick opinion on that particular question?
I agree that when you're having an actual conference with the teacher talking about an individual student, yes, the student or the child needs to be there because they need to be actively involved in their own education. The only difference I'd make is if it's a back-to-school night where it's more of like an open house and you're just going and seeing the structure of the building, meeting in general, a teacher presentation, and you're not talking about individual students and trying to encourage individuals on doing better, then I prefer the students stay at home, let the parents go in and out, and then if the parent needs to set up an individual conference because they knew that last year or there was a pattern of some issues with their child in the past and they want to be proactive, then they can set that up individually and then have the child present at the actual conference. Does that make sense?
That makes perfect sense. Yes, good.
So if it's more of an open house, back to school
right.
night, students, you stay home and do your homework, and you take care of your needs in that way. And then if it's an actual conference where we're trying to do the three-legged stool, then you are definitely a part of that triangle.
Okay,
and
good.
Other suggestions? Go ahead.
Actually, Greg, we've only got 3 minutes left.
Oh, my.
And we need about a minute to wrap up at the end. So actually, if I can, if we can move to how to have a parent-teacher conference, and I will make my part short.
Okay.
I'll go first, but I'll make it short. And
okay.
That's because I have an article online, and that will be in our links of how to do parent-teacher conferences. There's actually a second article that I am going to recommend people look at, and that's the one on how to do problem-solving with children, but you use the same process even if you do parent-teacher conferences with children present and with teachers there. So I'm going to have Chris add that to the links. Greg, I'm going to let you take, and just if you can, maybe limit it to one and a half minutes on
okay.
your advice for how to do parent-teacher conferences.
Okay. First of all, attitude is everything. So go into your parent conference with a positive attitude and a cooperative, collaborative approach in your heart. Okay? So be open to working with the teacher rather than defensive and telling the school what they're doing wrong. Because I think of school, when you're doing public education, you basically are trying to meet all these learning styles on a limited and shrinking budget, and so a part of that learning has to be done at home with all three components, the student, the teacher, and the parent working together.
Good.
And then
good,
I would also recommend that if there
if
has
we've
been
got
a
about, we have less than a minute.
Okay, there has been a past history, then try to develop a plan of action and make sure you set up additional conferences as needed. Don't be limited to just a fall and a spring conference, because that spring conference is basically to say, you know, your son or daughter didn't do as well as they should have. We'll recommend summer school or repeating next year or another miserable year. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And everybody else, thank you, everyone, for listening today and for joining us on Parents Tool Talk. If you'd like to be a guest parent on our next show, just email producer@parentstooltalk.com with your topic suggestions. I hope you'll join us next time when our topic will be 10 Laws of Happily Ever After for Parents and Families with guest expert Trevor Dimmick. Until next month, this is Jody Johnston-Powell, and I'm always yours in service to families. Goodbye now.